Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Earlier this summer, the automaker Volvo bid farewell to gas-powered cars. Granted, it'll be a long, drawn-out goodbye. The company will still build traditional current models, but vehicles designed after 2019 will be only electric or hybrids. Meanwhile, on Friday, another company, super high-end automaker Tesla, begins the first few deliveries of its new mid-price battery-powered car called the Model 3. And this week, Toyota announced plans for a long-range fast-charging electric vehicle out, the company says, in 5 years. For fans of electric cars, these are exciting developments, but they sure are a long time coming. 20 years ago, the predictions for how many of us would be driving electric today seem wildly optimistic. This hour on The Exchange, why electric cars have been slow to become mainstream and whether that will change. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have three guests for the hour. Rebecca Oler is here, an administrator at the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services, where she oversees programs on energy, climate change, and transportation. Also with us, Dan Scully, architect, member of the E-Team, which developed a program for creating electric vehicle infrastructure in the 90s. Scully also helped students at Conval High design a solar-powered car that won the Tour de Sol. And also with us, Jamie Page Deaton, managing editor for U.S. News & World Report's Best Car Rankings. Welcome to all of you. And Jamie, I want to start with you. What is an electric car? How fully electric is it?
Well, you know, there's actually a range of cars when you're talking about electric cars, and they range from basically electrified to fully electric. Now, when you're starting at the more traditional end of the range, you're talking about an electrified cars, and these are cars which we used to call mild hybrids. Automakers have moved away from calling them hybrids because the minute you call something a hybrid, consumers really expect like 50 miles to the gallon. And what these cars do, and in fact, you might, if you've bought a new car recently, you probably have the system in it. What it is the car will shut down at stoplights, you know, when you're in traffic, but you still have electric power for your air conditioner, your radio, that sort of thing. The next step up is hybrid cars. These are cars that have both a gasoline engine and a battery pack. Some of them can run on, you know, for short distances at slow speeds on electric power alone.
So around town.
Around town. And those are really good if you do a lot of city driving because you'll lose a lot or use a lot less gas there. The next kind of half step up there is plug-in hybrids. And these are cars that have a longer electric-only range. Generally speaking, they're between 20 to 50 miles or so. You can plug them in at night and charge them. And then, you know, when you run out of charge, the gasoline engine kicks in. In some cases, that gasoline engine is actually powering the car. In others, it's acting as a generator for the electric motor. So it's generating electricity, not power for the wheels. And then way down at the end is the actual electric car. This is a car that would run purely on battery power. You plug it in to charge it up either at home or using a charging station. And this is where a lot of the news is recently because, you know, you've got Tesla, which sucks up a lot of the air in the automotive industry. But you also have, I mean, the thing to remember from a consumer perspective is Tesla's not the only game in town. You've got the Chevrolet Bolt, which came out last year. Kia has an EV. Hyundai's releasing an EV later this year. Almost every major automaker, you know, by 2019, 2020 is going to have a fully electric car on the market. And many have them right now.
So a lot to clear up. So all those companies that you said that are releasing EVs, electric vehicles, are those EVs fully 100% electric? Are they hybrids? Are they mild hybrids, a term that I'd not heard until I started preparing for the show?
I mean, right now, every automaker has a hybrid or a mild hybrid available. Most of them have plug-in hybrids available. The pure EVs, which are battery-powered only, no electric engine at all, those are a little bit more rare, but I would say they're more common than most consumers think. I mean, most consumers wouldn't think like, oh, I can walk into, you know, a Kia dealership and get a fully electric vehicle, but you can.
Wow.
You can, later this year, you'll be able to walk into a Hyundai dealership and get a fully electric vehicle. You can walk into a Chevy dealership, which I think seems a little bit incongruous for a lot of people because you think Chevy, you think giant trucks, but Chevy's got the Chevrolet Bolt, fully electric vehicle, gets about 250 miles of battery range, which is a little bit more than the Tesla Model 3 is promising. And it's on the market now, whereas the Model 3 is just coming out. So there is a wide range of options for consumers, whether you want to go a little bit electric or fully just, you know, charge up and go.
On the more fully electric side, or at least plug-in hybrid, are most of these cars, Jamie, small cars? Because we hear from listeners, you know, here in New Hampshire, you know, people like to haul their snowmobile, or they, you know, they do construction work and they need to haul stuff around, and, you know, people want to make their dump runs. So can you get like a truck that's half electric or so?
Well, you know, GM used to put out a hybrid Silverado and a hybrid GMC Sierra. They don't anymore. Demand was pretty bad. And, you know, when you're talking about electric cars, the big challenge is weight. The heavier the car, the more energy it takes to move, and that's going to deplete your batteries faster. So, yes, most hybrid and electric cars right now tend to be on the smaller side. That is changing, however, because consumer demand right now is around small SUVs and small crossovers. So you can get yourself into a hybrid Lexus RX 450h. I had that as a test car just a couple weeks ago. It's great. It's a midsize luxury SUV, and you can go electric around town, gas on the highway. The Tesla also has the Tesla Model X, which is their large SUV. It gets about 289 miles, you know, if you get on electric range, if you get the most expensive battery packed. The problem with that is it ranges from $82,000 up to $145,000.
Oh my gosh, for a car.
For a car. But you can still get like a Toyota RAV4 hybrid, starts at about $29,000, and it's got all-wheel drive, which makes it great for New Hampshire because, you know, you can throw some snow tires on it and that sort of thing. So there are options where if you're a consumer and you kind of live, you know, that New Hampshire lifestyle where there's snow, you want to do a dump run, you're not going to be able to tow your boat with an electric car at this point. But it is coming. So you can, you know, maybe just if you really want to kind of take a baby step towards lowering your carbon footprint a little bit, you know, maybe you get an electric car for driving around town and just keep a truck around for when you're going to the dump or when you're going to the lake.
Well, and speaking of carbon footprint, Becky, I did want to ask you, sometimes these cars are marketed as emissions free. Now, how accurate is that?
Well, nothing is truly emissions free. But if you're looking at just what's coming out of a tailpipe, a battery electric vehicle doesn't have a tailpipe. So it is emissions free. However, you do need to factor in the emissions that come from generating the electricity by which it's powered to begin with. When you take that into consideration, it is still far, far less emissions than a conventional gasoline or a diesel vehicle because our power plants are so well controlled, number one. So they've got emissions controls on the stacks. In New Hampshire, it's also low carbon because of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. We have a relatively low carbon footprint for our electric generation in the Northeast, in the REGI states. I forgot where I was going.
Well, the idea that people are trying to make this calculation, mm-hmm. and years back anyway, I remember people said, you know, you can't call this emissions free or low emissions because you're maybe plugging into a grid that includes a lot of coal plants. So, you know, there's a calculation there. So go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, there are calculators available online, a lot of them actually. And sure, if you plug in, if you're in the New Hampshire region, then yes, you're much lower emissions. If you're in Ohio and you're looking at electric power that's generated primarily by coal, you're better off with a gasoline vehicle.
Well, I saw one of those calculators online. It said, depending on what state you live in, mm-hmm. or what region, it kind of depends on how that region is powered. And in some of the Midwestern states or Southern states, you're powered more by coal. Maybe your electric vehicle isn't so green and clean. But here, where we've got a more diversified, cleaner mix, it is.
It is.
Dan, go ahead.
What's interesting now is the fact that we have a fully working photovoltaic systems, and we have full electric cars. And if you want to be without emissions, the big fossil up in the sky is can provide the electricity directly on site to power your, to energize your car. And then you are now emission free.
So if your house is powered 100% by solar and you plug in at home,
right,
you're good.
And that's where the industry is getting very interesting, because the systems to convert, to have the car actually even support the house during a power outage, those systems can go now back and forth, and they become mutually independent systems.
Okay, and we will definitely get to that, because that's really cool, where there's a power outage and maybe your car can help you out. But
let's
just for basics, Dan, you know, how many people realistically are going to get 100% of their energy from solar at home?
It's a growing percentage. I mean, that's, if you look over the last 30, 40 years, it is really, it's been a slow growth, but it feels like it's happening fast now, that the electric cars are available, the photovoltaics are available. Those pieces are becoming mainstream, efficient, it's not experimental. And so I think it's now this is going to begin to happen.
Go ahead, Jamie. I'd love your thoughts on this sort of greenhouse gas equation.
Yeah, this is something you know, that I think a lot of people who are considering an electric vehicle actually struggle quite a bit with, because you not only have the emissions issue, but you also have the issue of how the materials that are used to create electric car batteries are brought in.
Extracted. Sometimes in
less than ideal
ways.
Circumstances. The thing to remember, though, is, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. If you want to live a modern lifestyle, you're going to pollute. And so what you, I think people need to realize is they need to figure out, it's kind of like, you know, if you're going to start a diet or exercise program, think about what's sustainable, what are some small steps that I can take to keep up with. I mean, I don't think you need to all of a sudden go and, you know, go get a ton of solar panels and do all this stuff and get an electric car and all of a sudden, you know, your range is only 100 miles so you can't go visit mom every weekend, that kind of thing. But I think you can make some small steps. And, you know, to Dan's point, the home solar technology is really improving. You know, Tesla is not just a car company. They're really interested in becoming an energy company. So they've created a whole home battery system, which is not fully rolled out, you know, in mainstream yet. But what it is it will allow your home, you know, to charge and keep a master battery inside. So power outages will be a thing of the past. They also have, and I think this is great because I live in a historic home, they now have solar roof tiles and that look like shingles. So if you're worried about preserving the aesthetics of your house because, you know, solar panels don't always look all that great, you know, you can get one and it looks like an asphalt roof. They have ones that look like slate roof. They have ones that look like terracotta tiles. And, you know, within probably the next 10 years, the price of those is going to drop precipitously. So as these things roll out, as more consumers get interested, that's going to bring down the price for the rest of us, which is ultimately good.
The exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're looking again at electric cars. Lots of developments around electric vehicles this summer from a variety of companies. But these vehicles have been slower to come to market. The public's been slower to adopt them than many predicted a decade or two ago. We're looking at that and whether it will change. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can always respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Becky, go ahead. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I think Jamie makes a really good point about whatever you do in a modern society, you are going to have some impact on the environment. And it is very important to remember that, you know, you think about gasoline and it's so ubiquitous in our society that most people just don't really think about all of the downstream or upstream impacts of that. And I know that there's a lot a lot to be learned about the impacts from the mining for the lithium for the battery packs in these vehicles. And I certainly hope that as a society, you know, we make strides in that and make sure that we are having the least impact possible. But it's not compared against zero impact. It's compared against the impacts of drilling for oil and fracking for oil. And so you've got to weigh the two.
And it's not like drilling for oil is an impeccably clean process that
exactly.
harms nothing.
Exactly.
Let's talk to our listeners, all of you. And Lori's calling in from Franklin. Hi, Lori. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
You know, I'm on my second Prius, and I moved my dad over to a hybrid Lexus. And I'm on the wait list, by the way, for those Tesla shingles. I've been in contact with a rep in California. They're not in the Northeast yet, but I'm going there. But I'm a one-car household, and so my, you know, the range of these vehicles is a real challenge that's, like, holding me off and why I think the market isn't growing as fast. Like you said, if you can't get to go visit grandma every other weekend in your car, what do you do? And then, of course, the other issue, I remember when the power went out for 6 days a couple of years ago, after a, nor'easter. What would I do then?
Oh, right. How do you power up your car if the power's out? After the ice storm of 08, I think some people were out for 11 days or something. That's a great point, Lori. So let's tackle this, folks, because first of all, Dan, range anxiety, that's an issue, right? People are afraid they won't be able to get where they need to go.
I know several owners of a Tesla who has talked about never having run out. He's on his second Tesla. They have supercharge stations that are you push in the app and it tells you where the next one is. I think you start to adapt. You develop the pattern just as you know where all the next gas stations are. It will become more common. But that mention of the Tesla Powerwall as a interface between the photovoltaics and the house energy systems, that will become a backup, and that's also a backup for the car. Or if the car is used as a backup during a power outage, it will only do your critical loads. It's not going to do the whole house for the 8 days, but it.
Okay, you're getting a little bit. I'm starting to not understand what you're saying, Dan. Can you be a little more clear on sort of the challenge that our listener talks about, which is, you know, oh my gosh, the power is out and I can't charge my car.
Okay. The way that the power can be stored between outages is something like the Tesla Power Pack. And I only mention that one because it's an industry product.
So it's a battery that lasts for a long time.
It's a more efficient battery tied to the energy systems of the house and the car. And those can back up the power. And that is what your caller is calling about, is how what happens over that time. So those systems could back up her car and also back up critical issues with the house.
How long, though? I mean, that power outage of 08 lasted, at least 10 days for some folks.
You'd have to calculate the loads and what the Tesla system does. I know they're talking about combining some of their power walls to meet a certain loads.
All right. A lot more to talk about on this issue of range anxiety and how you charge and where you charge and how long it lasts. We will follow up after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, lots of developments around electric cars this summer, with big announcements from Tesla, Toyota, Volvo, and others. But still, these vehicles have been slower to come to market, and the public's been slower to adopt them than many predicted years ago. We want to hear from you. Why do you think that's the case? What questions or comments do you have about electric cars? The number 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Dan Scully, Becky Oler, Jamie Page Deaton, right back to our listeners. Howard's calling in from Enfield. Hi, Howard. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My question for discussion is, do the guests have any idea, are they following the people who are responsible for making sure the grid can supply all the electric cars, solar panels, and wind turbines that are trying to be connected to it?
So is the grid ready for an expansion of electric cars? What do you think, Jamie?
I think short answer at this point, no. I think, you know, if you're and it also kind of depends on the time of year and the area that you're in which you're living. You know, if you're in the middle of July and you're in an area where everybody's cranking up their air conditioner at the same time that they're plugging in their cars, the grid is going to have a major issue with that. Now, automakers are putting some solutions in place to deal with that. Most electric cars have an app that works with your smartphone, so you can tell the car, hey, I'm going to plug you in, but I don't want you to actually start charging until the load on the grid is, you know, lower. And so you're not going to cause, you know, a brownout on my street or anything like that.
This is if you've got the car parked and charging at home.
Parked and charging at home. And so that, and also a lot of these apps, I mean, this is an app that actually Ford brought out where the idea is that everybody, you know, has a Ford, obviously, but the Fords on this app that are charging will talk to each other and say, okay, load is kind of high now. You charge first, then I'll charge, and then you'll charge. And so everybody will get their car charged, but by taking turns, so they're not charging all at once, so that lessens the load. So this is something that at least, you know, automakers are thinking about, but it is something that, you know, utilities and infrastructure need to think about as well.
Well, and to your point, Howard, I've got an article from the Telegraph, a British newspaper, which says, kind of suggesting what you say, Howard, plans to ban the sale of new diesel and petrol cars by 2040 in a bid to encourage people to buy electric vehicles are a tall order and will place unprecedented strain on the national grid, motoring experts have warned. So that's from Britain. So you're right on target to voice that concern. Go ahead, Dan and Becky. Go ahead, Dan.
There are two pieces that are missing in that analogy there. The grid is a centralized source of power, which is distributing that power to decentralized locations. And photovoltaics will produce the power in a decentralized location. They produce it right where you are without the need for the grid. The other piece where the coordination comes with the grid is that battery storage can be done off-peak. So off the peak of when the utility is at its being used the most heavily. And that's the kind of coordination that has to happen. And then that, in the end, becomes advantageous to the grid, the power source, that they're effectively used during their slow time.
So if you've got a solar-powered home, who cares about the grid? You're not on it.
That's true. But if you need, well, the best systems, in fact, use the grid as a backup, and that backup can be used off-peak.
Sure. So as Jamie said, you know, you could power your car at 2 in the morning when right. people generally aren't watching TV or have their lights on. Go ahead, Becky.
Yeah, one of the catches, though, even if you've got a solar-powered house, is that if you are interconnected to the grid, when the power goes out on the grid, your solar system shuts down as well. You have to have set it up so that it can disconnect from the grid in order to have your own power when the grid itself is down. And that's done as a safety measure. You don't want to have your solar system feeding power into a line that the electric company thinks is dead, and they get their workers up there working on it and all of a sudden find out that there's power in that line. But there are a couple of sort of tools that the utilities can use to help manage the demand. They can, I mean, first of all, education and outreach, and talk to their customers about, if you buy an electric car, you know, here's the impact on rates. If everybody charges during the peak rates, they're going to have to put in more generation capacity. Everybody's rates go up. But if you charge in the overnight hours, you know, you're using an off-peak time. So I think there's a huge amount to be done in terms of educating the public about how our electricity is supplied and when it is more advantageous to use it. They could implement time of use rates, and that would sort of give people a financial incentive to use the power when it's at non-peak times. And that's something that I think is a policy issue that needs to be discussed in the state. And then they also, one of the things that has been talked about, and I don't know if the utilities will go here or not, but they really want to know where they're getting, particularly if they're getting clusters. You know, it seems that if your neighbor buys a hybrid, you're more likely to buy a hybrid. So if your neighbor buys an EV, maybe you're going to get a cluster at the end of this cul-de-sac. And it would really help the utilities to know that that is happening. And one of the things that's been talked about is perhaps they would offer some small incentive for installing EV chargers in your garage, because then they know where they are.
And then they can accommodate that
need. They can accommodate that. They can put up additional transformers or upgrade the lines as needed to support that power.
Yeah. If you're on the grid, again, in Dan's vision, you know, you have a solar-powered home, and so you don't even need to really worry about that stuff.
Yeah, but again, most solar-powered homes are on the grid, and they're net metered. They're feeding their power back and forth, and when they're generating power and using it, they're using their own. But if they're generating power during the day and then they're home at 10 o'clock at night and their solar system's no longer generating, they're getting power off the grid. So most of them are interconnected.
Well, Howard, it's a great question. Thank you for the call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So all of you, this conversation that we just had about, like, you know, the timing and the plugging in and the range. Jamie, it just seems like, in a way, this doesn't quite mesh with American culture. We want to be free to go where we want to go, when we want, how far we want, spontaneously. I don't have to think about, ooh, do I have enough charge? How much does an electric car feel like a constraint on that sort of, you know, spontaneous, on-demand lifestyle?
You know, I think, after I answer this, we'll probably get some calls from a bunch of EV owners disagreeing with me, but it can be a bit of a constraint. Right now, only about 1% of new car sales are cars with a plug, and that includes both fully electric cars and plug-in hybrids.
1%?
Only 1%, and only a little bit less than 3% of the new car market is hybrids. I mean, hybrids and all-electric cars, you know, under 3%. So this is something that has not really caught on with a lot of people, and I think people do have these issues with range anxiety. They worry about charging. They worry about, oh, I have to get a charging station at home. And then there's the added factor of cost. An electric car costs more than an upfront than an equivalent gasoline car. So there are some compromises that people do have to make. That said, those compromises are starting to go away. There is a much broader, more robust charging network, not only throughout New Hampshire, but nationwide. You do have to make some changes. You know, if you're talking about the Tesla supercharging network, it's going to take 20 minutes to charge your car when you get to one of those. So if you're on, you know, a road trip down 95, you pull into a rest stop in Connecticut, and there's somebody there, and they're charging, and it takes them 20 minutes, and then it takes you 20 minutes. I hope you enjoy that cup of coffee, because, you know, it's going to take you 40 minutes to get a full charge on your car. So
okay,
that's a lifestyle
change. People don't
want to
stop for
like
40 minutes
no.
when they're running down to a business meeting in Connecticut.
But there is, you know, what you do have, though, is, you know, some middle-of-the-road options. You know, a great one that I'm a big fan of is the Chevrolet Volt, which is different from the Bolt. It's Volt like Virginia, Bolt like Boston. The Volt is an extended-range hybrid vehicle. So basically, with the Volt, you go 50 miles on electric power alone. And then the gasoline engine, which acts as a generator, kicks in. And then you can go a full-on 300 miles. You run out of gas, fill up at a gas station, continue on your way. Now, most people don't drive more than 50 miles a day. So most Volt owners report that they really don't buy a heck of a lot of gas because they're plugging in at night, they're charging it up, they're doing their daily commutes. But when it's road trip time, they just go and it drives like a regular car. It's the same thing with the Prius Prime, which is the Prius plug-in. And, you know, there are a number of plug-in hybrids that are currently on the market and coming out now. I mean, you can get a Ford plug-in hybrid, all this stuff. So, I mean, where you... If you're only driving on your day-to-day basis, you're driving 20, 25 miles, most of that will be done on electric power. And then when it's time to head on out on a road trip, you've got the gasoline engine to back you up.
And you're safe. So given those advantages, and I can see as you describe them, Jamie, why even bother with fully electric?
Well, because you still want to be a little, you know, you want to control the emissions that you're putting out while you're driving. You can still be a lot cleaner if you go for an electric car. You know, if you go kind of with the ideal that, you know, Dan's talked about, where you've got a solar system at home and you're charging, you know, purely on solar power and you're running your car off that, that is much, much, much cleaner than, you know, even running gas just when you're on a road trip. That said, you know, if you don't want to make that giant lifestyle change, going for a plug-in hybrid or even, you know, a hybrid is a great way to do it. And I would also say, you know, most people I know who have an electric car, they have a gasoline car too. So they drive the electric car, the majority of their driving, their day-to-day driving, the vast majority of the miles they cover is on electric power, and they're being clean there. And then they kind of have, you know, their weekend road trip car, which maybe 4 or 5 times a year, they're driving it on vacation, and then the rest of the time, they're not using it. So they're managing to find that middle road where you can be clean, you can lessen your impact on the environment while still, you know, having the kind of lifestyle that you're used to.
Go ahead, Becky.
Yeah, I think to get to your question of why even consider the electric car, if New Hampshire and the other states in the region are serious about the goals that we've set for reducing greenhouse gas emissions, we can't do that unless we electrify the transportation sector.
We have to do this.
We have to do that. We cannot meet our greenhouse gas reduction goals if we remain primarily a petroleum-fueled transportation network. That doesn't mean that we're going to be switching 100%. We're not going to do no cars by 2040 that are running on petroleum. That's not realistic. I think we're in the early adopter phase right now, just as we had early adopters for hybrid vehicles when they first came out. New Hampshire was actually one of the highest per capita in the country for adoption of hybrid electric vehicles in the early years, and I think we're still pretty high in that ranking. And so I expect that in New Hampshire we're also going to see a fairly good pace in the adoption of EVs. Right now we only have about 800 electric vehicles registered in the state. But that's a 20% increase over last year. So
of course, if there's almost nothing, it's easy to have a 20% increase.
I think the challenge is going to be how do we as the state create a policy and make investments so that we help incentivize the charging infrastructure. Sort of the conventional wisdom is you need to have a fast charger about every 50 or 60 miles. So if I'm, sitting in Concord, I need to know that I can go 50 miles in any direction and have a charger. Not that I'm going to need to use it, but to battle that range anxiety, I just need to know it's there.
Right. So, and that brings up the advantage that Jamie talked about of having that hybrid where you don't have range anxiety because
exactly.
You know the gas engine will kick in. So talking about infrastructure, Dan, I know this is something that you have worked on. How robust is the public charging infrastructure here in New Hampshire? Never mind the house, never mind my office. How much is there available?
It's definitely growing. I don't know the answer to your question exactly, but it's definitely a growing thing. And as Becky said, we have to become electric to cut down on the emissions. And that actually is the same thing residentially. All the other fuels other than electric are fossil-based. And if we can, and the electric we get from the coal plant or from the power plant is electric based, but it's still got fossil fuels. So when we get the photovoltaics, we can start to do electric houses and cars that are all then fossil fuel free.
All right. We will talk a lot more and take a lot more of your questions and comments in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
In the market for a modern car that can really take you places? Then look no further than NHPR's Summer Car Raffle. Your $50 raffle ticket could turn into $25,000 toward a new Toyota, Mazda, Hyundai, Ford, or Honda. So get your tickets now because, great Scott, it's almost over. We'll be picking our lucky winner this Saturday at noon. Get in on the fun when you get your raffle tickets now at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the latest on electric cars and why there are so few of them on the roads here in northern New England. Let's get your thoughts on that question. Call in The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Rebecca, Jamie, Dan, let's go right back to our listeners. Peter is in Walpole. Hi, Peter. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead, Peter.
I just wanted to clarify about what the House needs to have set up for a electric car charging. I have a Tesla up here in Walpole, and all it really needs is a regular outlet, which is your 110 volt, 10 amp service. But if you really want to charge overnight, you can just also a 40 amp, 220, like a dryer hookup type of charging spot for your car, and it charges overnight. Most people was overnight. When there's less load on the system, on the grid, and it's cheap. It's about $7 to go about 300 miles.
Wow, that is really cheap. So you have a Tesla. How far does it take you, Peter?
They advertise that it can go 300 miles, but it really depends on how you drive. If you drive very conservatively, you're not revving up basically and peeling out of parking spaces. you know, if you use cruise control, basically you can get more mileage. And it's really not much different than a gasoline car. It's just that we don't think in those terms because we know that there's always going to be a gas station somewhere nearby. And Tesla owners know that there's a whole range of Tesla stations all over the country that are 200 amp services, and you can charge up for about a half an hour, 40 minutes for free.
So for free because it's a Tesla station, right? And they want you to do that. You're in Walpole, well, Peter. That's not near any sort of major metro areas. I mean, how hard is it for you to find a charging station?
There's one in Brattleboro.
Okay.
There's one north in Lebanon. And the car actually has it programmed in where all the charging stations are. So it'll tell you where the nearest one is.
Okay.
And so when you use their GPS navigation system, that's one of the things that will tell you on a trip.
Yeah.
Where's the Tesla charging stations? There are other charging stations that are commercial ones. And if you have an account on a company called ChargePoint, they're usually within a parking garage, and then you just go into the parking garage and charge.
Okay.
And,
Peter, good to hear from you. And it raises a couple questions. Jamie, you know, he says that I've heard of these Tesla supercharging stations, but that it's free. I wonder, how long is that going to last?
Not long at all. I'm guessing Peter either has, you know, a Model S or a Model X from Tesla, which came with free access to the charging stations. Now that they're rolling out the more economical Tesla Model 3, that free access to the charging stations is going away. And the thing to remember, too, you know, we talk about, you know, the cost of adopting these electric cars. I was at a press event last week, actually, and was talking to a representative who used to work for Tesla. Tesla loses, on average, $13,000 for every Model S that they sell.
And they lose money on it.
And the reason for that is, you know, they treat Model S buyers. And remember, too, you know, they're spending between $68,000 and $140,000 for this car on a Model S. So these are people of means. And the representative I was talking to said, you know, we knew that these were people who, if they had a bad experience, they could ruin us. And so, you know, they were spending, you know, somebody had a complaint. Okay, we'll swap out the battery. That costs $40,000 for Tesla. Okay, we want to make sure that they don't have any range anxiety. We want them to be evangelical about this car. Guess what? Free charging. We'll set up the charging network. So this was about Tesla investing in kind of their buyers having an excellent experience so that they would, you know, go out and say, hey, driving an EV is not so bad. And for the most part, it's worked. I don't know of a single Tesla buyer who is unhappy with their car.
But how long can that free electricity last? That's like, you know, the station down the road from my house offering free gas.
Well, and here's the issue that Tesla faces. And this is, you know, the kind of the entire automotive industry is watching with bated breath, because as they make deliveries of these Model 3s, which is their new model, it's got a 250-mile range. It starts at about $35,000. Tesla took pre-orders about 2 years ago. They got 400,000 people to put $1,000 down. They're starting deliveries for, like, you know, the first, I think, you know, the first 30 will get theirs on Friday. And then the rest of customers have been told, we don't know when you're getting your car.
Hmm.
And Tesla has had some pretty bad quality issues with the Model S and the Model X. I mean, the Model X, which is their SUV, has these really cool gold wing doors, which are doors that open like a DeLorean in Back to the Future. People couldn't get the doors to work. And
Ouch.
That's a pretty big deal, you know, when you can't drive if you can't get in it. So it'll be interesting to
climb in the window.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Model 3, Matt in Ware says he's signed up for a Model 3. He says solar systems that store energy in batteries have the advantage that they can provide electricity to the home during power outages. You talked about that earlier, Dan. Matt says net metering systems have advantages. They are less expensive, and the utility company is acting as an infinite storage system for the surplus electricity generated by your solar panels. Matt asks, is anybody making solar systems that have both battery storage and net metering so that when you have topped up your batteries, whether in your electric car or in your basement, the system switches to net metering? That's kind of a specific question, but Dan, I'm wondering what you think.
I think that's possible, yes. Most solar homes now are done, especially if they're electric with the air-to-air heat pumps. We use the grid as the backup, even if we have photovoltaics producing as much power as the house might use over, say, a course of a year. it's not all being used at the same time. So the net metering allows us to sell power back to the utility and then bring it forward. And that those systems can also have a generator hookup, and the generator hookup is essentially the same as the battery storage systems. So I believe the two can be coordinated, yes.
Go ahead, Becky.
There's also the potential for use of old hybrid and electric vehicle batteries. So when the batteries get to a point where they're no longer able to respond to the fast charge discharge in their use as an electric vehicle battery, they still.
I'm not really sure what you mean by that.
So when you're charging your electric vehicle, particularly if you're using one of the DC fast chargers, you're doing a very rapid charge. And then you're doing a fairly rapid discharge. And that cycle on a battery, it takes its toll.
I see.
And it gets to a point where it's really no longer able to handle that cycle, but it still has the capacity to store energy. And we are going to be approaching the time when we're going to start seeing a lot of these EV batteries coming out of cars that are no longer, you know, in use as a car battery. They're still perfectly able to do this sort of long-term storage that Dan was talking about. So we're going to have this resource that could be a big potential for moving that market, that side of the equation, forward.
Well, this may sort of answer Dave in Littleton's question, who sent an email. He says, a friend of mine suggested standardizing batteries so they can be changed quickly and easily. Then you wouldn't have to wait for them to charge. Think Rhino gas tanks. Go ahead, Becky.
That's a model that's been tried in both Israel and I think Denmark. Mm-hmm. There was another I can't remember the name of the company, but it was a let's drive through and you pop the old battery out and put a new battery in and you're on your way. One of the biggest barriers to that is that the vehicle manufacturers don't standardize what their batteries look like or how they're connected or where they're located in the car. And so until you could get all vehicle manufacturers to adopt the same protocol, that model really isn't going to work very well.
Wow, good luck with that. I mean, given the different cultures and desires and business models of all the car companies out there.
Yeah, we can't even get them yet to adopt the same charging protocol. So we have different connectors for different types of cars. So that a Tesla, a Chevy Bolt can't go plug into a Tesla station.
But I understand that Tesla provides an adapter that you can plug into the more conventional system. But you're right.
Well, that's
true.
They
don't want to. Nobody wants to standardize yet, and they have to.
But someone's going to come up with an adapter, just like, you know, half of my household has Androids and half of the household has Apples, and somehow we make it work. So hard to believe we run out of time, and I do want to ask you this one last question. So, Dan, do you have an electric car?
No. And I would love to have one. They are smooth and powerful. There's a lot of torque. I would love to have one. My son designs for BMW, and when I last bought my car, they didn't have a good electric car that I wanted.
Oh, so you have to buy from BMW because of the family connection.
A little family. Yeah.
No, and that makes sense. Yeah. You probably get a discount, too. Right. So that's no judgment there. So you're waiting. How about you, Becky?
No, I don't have an electric car right now. But as soon as I win the raffle on Saturday, I will.
Come on. You're like the greenhouse gas lady at DES. You don't have an electric car?
Not yet. I keep my cars for a long time. I now have a 2007 Honda Accord, and I get pretty good gas mileage, but I won't be changing that car out for probably another 2 or 3 years. I keep my cars for over 200,000 miles, but I will certainly be, my next vehicle will have a plug.
Okay, so Dan's waiting for his son's discount. You're being a frugal Yankee and hang on to that car as long as possible. Okay, you're the high-tech gal at, you know, covering the car industry. How about you, Jamie?
No, I don't have an electric car. I have a Toyota 4Runner, which guzzles gas. But for the last time I was in the market for a car, there was not a good electric option. If you're in the market for a car today, you are swimming in opportunities. And I would even say, you know, even if you're going to be in the market 2-3 years from now, you are swimming in opportunities.
All right. Well, we will have to check in on this topic again, maybe in a year, see how it's progressed. Thank you all very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.